Small world, big data.
Patch management and backup have got to be two of the loneliest job functions that anybody could be assigned. Extremely boring, repetitious until something goes wrong and then all hell breaks loose. And someone is going to take the fall for this.
Hi, Mike Matson with Small World Big Data. We are here with another exciting episode of the Tech Top 6. I've got Warren Avery, the chief editor and curator of the IT Weekly newsletter, where all of our great content comes from. Welcome, Warren.
Mike, as always, a pleasure. I'm always amazed that you can be so upbeat and bright-eyed and bushy-tailed when we do this thing. I'm impressed with your activity. We've got some great stuff to talk about this week.
I get excited by the upcoming information. I want to learn something. And in every episode we do, Warren, I learn something, which is, you know, after the age I'm at and the number of years I've spent in this business, that's not a small thing.
You know, Mike, I'm amazed that anybody in the IT business can stay current and at the same time do their job. I spend a lot of time getting these articles, and 90% of what I read are marketing hype. You know, there's good stuff out there, and that's what I try to do for our readers and listeners is find those good technical articles that help them understand why they have to solve problems. Good stuff out there. You just have to find it.
We'll tell you at the end of this episode how to look at the IT Weekly newsletter productively and more information about getting your hands on the article database there. What we do here in the Tech Top 6 is look at six of the most interesting, most popular, bestest articles that Warren has hand-curated out of the other articles that he's already hand-curated into the IT Weekly newsletter, and to just kind of go through them a little bit to hopefully motivate you to dig a little deeper into some of these places. So great for professional development, great for education, great for keeping current. Let's get started. Warren, article number one is on security management, but there's an angle to this with what it means to be enterprise, I think, and some of the challenges trying to balance security with other things. So tell us what this article is going to educate us about.
Yep. It's an article out of CIO Insight called What is Enterprise Security Management? It's written by Dan Virgilito, who's a security researcher over at InfoSec Institute. And security teams are getting increased pressure to ensure the safety, but also just the future existence of the company. And think about all the ways that bad guys can gain access to your company. Bring your own devices, corporate networks, back-end servers, email phishing ploys. The list goes on and on. And the problem of a rock and a hard place with these security guys has to do with giving access so the staff can do their work and at the same time increasing the protection of the company's assets. And this article goes into detail about ESM or enterprise security management. And in a nutshell, Mike, ESM is about integrating guidelines, policies, and proactive measures for the enterprises, not just the specific areas. And the top level areas they cover are enterprise-wide compliance, not just one area. Have a business-focused protection. Make sure you understand the clarity of your data infrastructure and how you're protecting it, and also get to security at all levels. And I'm not going to go into a lot of detail here about this, but what they talk about is you want to deploy an ESM framework, patch management, threat modeling, architecture principles, risk management, master data management, mobile safety, SDN, IoT. It goes into the whole thing. And remember it. ESM is a time-intensive exercise that really, really exercises everything about the company. And there's the old adage, pay me now or pay me later. That should be the mantra for ESM. So take a look at ESM and make sure you're looking at your entire company, not just pieces of it.
That's an interesting article in that it looks like it's attempting to give a complete umbrella or overview of everything that should fall into ESM. And I've had discussions with people who think that security is this and this and this, but then miss these six other things or pick and choose what you want to do for security and the rest will take care of itself when really you need to cover all the bases. And so this looks like a good article to start with and to make that more complete checklist of all the places you got to cover.
Yep.
If you're interested in this, go to the IT Weekly newsletter and type in the key phrase ESM today and you'll find this article. If you just type in something like ransomware, you'll get almost 500 articles. There's lots of other security topics you can type in. Security's been our basically number one topic for at least a year and a half now, Warren, isn't it?
Absolutely, Mike. And I wish we could have a lot of areas, but security is the central area for companies. I mean, it's just what I'm reading about on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, stay tuned to the Tech Top 6. And when we start getting out of security topics, that's probably when you'll know that all the major crises in the world are over and we can talk freely about other things. But right now, we got to keep this focus going because it's important. All right, article number 2 is interesting as well from a security perspective because it's about how you really authenticate someone using their fingerprints, their eyeballs, their biometrics, if you will, right? But we know biometrics have some faults and they're kind of expensive. Is there any reason why we're not doing more or we should be doing less biometrics?
Yeah, it's an article out of CIO Insight called "Is Biometric Technology Worth the Cost?" And one of the reasons it hasn't caught on is biometrics is expensive. And the market for biometrics is going to reach $69 billion a year by 2025. And the whole area is exploding with biometric security implementations, including fingerprinting, hand scanning, iris scanning, retinal scanning, facial recognition, voice recognition, hardware and software, and the list goes on. And devices for fingerprint scanning can cost as little as $20, but it really offers the lowest security. Having solutions at each door for facial recognition, et cetera, that can cost anywhere from $2,500 to $20,000 per door. And that's just for the hardware. Now start to factor in the software and continued maintenance and begin to see the problem. This article has a very good pro and con chart that looks at the factors involved in biometric implementation that outlines the areas that should be considered. And some of these areas are ethical concerns, the physiological data privacy issues, behavioral, artificial intelligence, machine learning, analyzed touchscreens for pressures and acceleration. They're not always good. They also have BaaS, biometrics as a service. And the cloud is going to start to offer this capability, meaning that companies will only need the hardware. I'm not sure that's going to work out. But anyway, Mike, biometrics is not going to go away, and the need for protection is increasing. And you and I know we've been talking about zero trust and two-factor authentication forever. And to that end, biometrics should be a technology that companies are exploring and investing, but it's still got a way to go.
You remember that old advice that the best security includes something you know, something you have, and something you are? And they combine all three of those things, sort of like a triple verification, right? And like, I guess that would be one of the original forms of three-factor authentication, multiple-factor authentication. But I always thought one of the problems with biometrics was if somebody stole, you know, the digital signature for your fingerprint or your eyeball, you can't go get a new fingerprint or a new eyeball, right? So it's kind of like one use. And I just, you know, again, have a company that I work with got hacked to the tune of 40 million credit card records. And, you know, I just can't believe that I'm going to give my eyeball pattern to anybody and say, yeah, you can have this and keep careful use of it because it's the only one I have.
So. Yeah. And what about this COVID or the pandemic? I mean, that could be changing your iris and you get a little infection in your eye. I mean, it could change. And then what do you do? I mean, it's got some faults here all the way around.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to use your eyeball to lock up your Bitcoin with, that's for sure.
Yep.
If you're interested in this article, biometric cost, we'll get you this article and probably lead you into a bunch of other interesting things around biometrics. Well worth taking a look if you're interested in how you authenticate people with multi-factor. Biometrics in general, just type in biometrics and you'll find 66 articles, Warren, on biometric technology on the IT Weekly newsletter.
Yep.
I think, again, you've picked an article number 3 that's really aimed at me. I'm not sure why you pick on me this way, Warren, but
you're so easy, Mike. You throw me these ones right down the center at 88 miles an hour. You got to swing at them. What can I tell you?
All right. This is about making bad. This is an article about making bad technology decisions, Warren. Why and how do we make bad technology decisions?
Well, it's an article out of InfoWorld. It's called 12 Ways to Make Really Bad Technology Decisions. And this article goes into detail about the thought processes. And the first one is a doozy, accepting executive decisions. Oh. C-levels tend to buy whatever is the immediate technology topic of the day. Do not go along to get along.
I have to stop you there, Warren. Do we count as the media and the media du jour? I mean, Tech Top 6, isn't that really...
Well, what's unique about us, Mike, is we don't cover companies, we don't cover products, we don't cover press releases. We try to be independent of that, but you're absolutely, we sort of fall into that.
We're guilty of causing people to do that, but go ahead.
Exactly. So you've got accepting executive decisions, failing to solicit customer inputs. Know your customer before you implement a decision. ignoring standards. You know, set up an internal solution to determine if something new is necessary. You get away from standards, you're opening up a whole bag of worms there. Okay. Fostering a one vendor approach. It can absolutely stymie innovative solutions. And I got into this business back when the adage was that no one ever got fired by buying IBM. Don't get hooked into one vendor. Deciding on a build versus a buy decision before you're doing any analysis, that can lead to a cost of delays in the long run. So you got to decide whether you do it. Here's a big one. Skipping a proof of concept, especially new with new technologies or a new product from an existing vendor. Don't skip that proof of concept. And this is only half of the thought processes in this article. It's an excellent read for any IT manager and how to avoid making bad decisions. We make bad decisions all the time, but at least give it some awareness.
So this is only six of the 12. So I really need to go look at the other half dozen ways to actually probably make good technology decisions, flip that back around. As a former product manager and product marketing person, I would say the number two one on your list is probably the biggest one, which is knowing your customer and getting customer inputs and failing to do that, because I saw so many decisions being made over personal opinion, big and small decisions that just went wrong because they never bothered to ask the person who's actually going to use the result about the value of it. It seems so easy, but it's really hard to keep that in mind. Bad technology decisions would be the phrase for this article. Check it out to make sure you understand all 12 of those things. Leadership, by the way, if you're interested in leadership, will get you over 330 articles, which is pretty cool. I really like the IT Weekly newsletter here for not just focusing on technology, even though this article says technology, but it's about leadership and management as well, professional development.
Yep.
Okay, on to our next article here, which is back to more serious topics about security and data breaches. I just mentioned before, one of the companies I am a client of got their data breached in a big way, and I'm sure we haven't yet to hear about all the fallout from that. Again, you think that people would know. But in a data breach, Warren, this article is giving you some advice on how to react. Is it more important to get back up and running in a more secure way or handling the PR impacts of being breached? Obviously, I have an opinion, but go ahead.
Yeah, this article, they're both equally important, but the article out of CPO Magazine is called If Only You Knew How to Really Plan for a Serious Data Breach. And it's by Steve Moore, who's the chief security strategist for Exabeam. And this article clearly demonstrates what President Dwight D. Eisenhower said. In preparing for battle, I have always found that plans are useless, but planning is indispensable. And this is especially true when a data breach occurs, and even more applicable if you're a Fortune 1000 company. And this article starts with some really eye-opening statements. For example, cyber attacks from China and Russia are now considered acts of war and are not covered by insurance. And additionally, a lot of companies are now dropping ransomware from their coverage. You've got to be aware of that. And another issue from a serious data breach is losing customers, also recruiting new talent, and the enormous cost of any sort of data breach. But there are steps that companies can take today. They say, first and foremost, implement a data recorder. And that's exactly the same thing as a black box on an airplane. It provides details on exactly what happens, where it happened, and when it happened. Look at your cloud provider. Determine ahead of time what logs they keep, what can be accessed, but more importantly, what is not being provided. Write your breach notification letter now. Don't wait until the pudding hits the fan, okay? Know the regulatory requirements now so as what you can and cannot be divulged. And know who to contact first. It should be the legal authorities, your customer, sales, whatever it is. Know which law enforcement agencies to contact. Establish a relationship before you need it. Get to know the players and get them to know you. And here's one that I didn't even think of. Know your red and green phrases. Make sure that you have somebody, more than one person, that knows how to speak for your company and know what phrases to include and what not to include. And make sure you have more than one person who can speak for the company, because when a disaster hits, they may not be available. And more importantly, practice what you're going to say. So getting back up is important, but that PR nightmare can be just as bad.
I know that I would say, you know, getting back up and getting secure and getting the data back and so on would probably be the key part. But if you don't handle the PR part right, you can go out of business. So that's clearly very important for somebody who's actually running a business. PR Nightmare is the name for this article. And if you're just interested in breaches altogether, just type in something like breach and you'll get over 400 articles on breaches. And that will give you plenty of encyclopedic-like information to research from. But if you're interested in the PR end of it, check this article out. Which takes us to our next article here, Warren, on ransomware, and again, also recovering from it. So I think this one's more along the lines of what I would focus on, which is, have I been breached? I've been hit with ransomware. How do I recover? And
yep.
Don't I just use my backups for that?
You would think that backups are a high priority for every company. And the article out of CSO Online is called Ransomware Recovery, 8 Steps to a Successful Recovery from Backups. And backups are important and they aren't. They're very boring. They're not very technically challenging until the pudding hits the fan, and then they become important and very exciting. And that's the problem. How often do you really need backups? I mean, you can go years and years and never actually need one. You got to do your restores and your practices and your tests, but how often do you ever look at them? And the article looks at companies must do to have an effective recovery plan in case of ransomware or disaster. Here's one. Keep your backups isolated. Make sure there's an air gap between backups and production. We've talked about this before. Use Write Once Media, Worm technology, or their virtually equivalents. They're costly, but they could save your bacon. Keep multiple types of backups, not only fulls, but incrementals. Don't forget the backup catalog. It's like losing the contacts on your phone numbers. The phone numbers exist, but you don't know how to get them. And it goes, I've only covered like half of these, Mike. There's lots of them here, but and things that we all know, but we don't do it. And the one I like is test, test, test. A backup without a restore is just a waste of time. And the backups are key to not paying ransomware and get up and running after disaster. Make sure your backups are current, they're isolated, and they're recoverable. It's a great article about what steps to take. And we all know it. You just got to be reminded. You know, bathing is, we have to do it every day to stay, you know, current. Backups are the same thing. You got to be aware of it.
And I think it's important to understand, too, that a backup by itself isn't sufficient. It has to be restorable, as you said, but it also has to be uncorrupted. A lot of people are finding when they're hit by ransomware that their backups have also been hit by ransomware. And they have nothing that they can restore to actually get back up and running, even though their backups were going off and look like they're fine, that their whole target repositories have been encrypted as well. So be careful
about
that.
And the bad guys are encrypting backups for like 2 and 3 months back. So it's not like you can go back a month and recover. I mean, the bad guys, they may be bad, but they're not stupid.
No, they're definitely taking on that. Okay, so backup steps. We'll get you this article on the IT Weekly newsletter. If you're just interested in the broader concept of backup, type that in. You'll get over 160 articles. If you're interested in data protection, you can type data protection in and probably find a whole other raft of articles as well as things like the enterprise security management articles we talked about earlier, which would include doing data protection tasks. So circles within circles there, but you can drill down into your article database, which is pretty large now, isn't it, Warren?
We just passed over 20,100 technical articles that you can put in either titles or articles or author or something along those lines. I think it's like my last count was like 20,120 technical articles out there. So,
you know, and you can go to Google and type in keywords, but you're going to get things that are full of marketing hype and vendor propagation. You go to someplace like TechTarget, same way. It's all sponsored material trying to get you to buy their thing or qualify you as a lead. But the IT Weekly newsletter is really just focused on news that you can use, I guess you would say. It's really educational, hype-free, very clean set of curated technology articles. So check it out.
You know what frustrates me a lot of times? You go to a company and they have a newsletter and you click on the newsletter and it's June 2017. Come on, guys. You know, you can't have a technical article that's 3 years old. If you take a look at the IT Weekly newsletter, you'll see two things. One's the date the article is written, the day it's posted, and those are usually only 2 or 3 days apart. So they're current technical articles.
I think there's a lot of research someone can do into that 20,000 article database too, on terms of trending topics and the changing views on how to approach something like security management and what's happened with our perspectives on ransomware over the last couple of years. So there's a lot of cool things you can do now that that database is so large.
Yeah, you know, one of the things we do is we have companies that want to have a newsletter search, and we have an SQL database that we can provide to companies to have their own search engine out there on their website. if somebody wants to do it, give us a call and we'll talk to them about
providing an API. There's an API to it. It's important for people to know that that's available.
Yep.
All right. Our final article today, Warren, is about patching. Patching and like Blazing Saddles, you know, patches. We don't need no stinking patches, right?
Yeah.
Actually, from an older movie again. What can companies do to keep up with their patch management burden? It becomes like technical debt for a while. The more stuff you install, the more versions you have of things, the more patches you have to keep up with. And I fall behind and I probably only have one thing here that I have to patch. And I look in every couple of months and it's like, wait, I missed six patches already. So what can a company do to keep up to date on everything they need to patch?
You're right. This morning I fired up my computer and I had a patch I had to install. And I didn't know how long that was going to take, but I had to do it. But it's an article out of Toolbox. It's called 10 Patch Management Practices to Boost Your Organization's Cybersecurity Posture. And two things, patch management and backup have got to be two of the loneliest job functions that anybody could be assigned. Extremely boring, repetitious until something goes wrong and then all hell breaks loose. And someone is going to take the fall for this. Usually it starts with the CIO. But with that said, patch management needs discipline, policies and processes, because effective patch management absolutely reduces risk. And there are 10 steps they give, and I'm only going to go into five of them, not a lot of detail. They talk about creating a management patch policy. Make sure you have that. Maintain a system and data application inventory. Know what you have and know what has to be updated. Identify vendor updates. Scan for vulnerabilities. And prioritize your patches. Not all patches have to be implemented right now, but there's a lot of CVE posts out there that tell you what are really the criticals. Patching is not exciting, Mike, but it's so very, very important. And you've got to have the processes and policies. Not only that, but you've got to have the staff that understands the importance of keeping the company safe. And patching is a very, very key part of that.
All right. So another article to check into to really get up to speed on what patch management should entail. And when you were saying that patch management and backup are the loneliest job functions, I'm thinking there's a song there somewhere, Warren, some sort of country western song about lonely people or something. I don't know. We'll work on that. IT music.
Well, we know you're not a singer, Mike, but that's another story.
I'm not a singer. All right. The keyword for this article is patching tips. And you'll get this article. If you just type in patch, for example, you'll get 90. So go to the IT Weekly newsletter database and just type in single words and see what you come up with. If you're interested in something or just browsing for a while, it's pretty cool, Warren, as we like to say in the biz.
Yep.
Tell us, though, how someone can really make best use of the IT Weekly newsletter. What should they do?
You go out to the itweeklynewsletter.com, itweeklynewsletter.com. You go into the home button, and under that, it says what's what in the last 24 hours. And there you'll see the last 13 articles that are important. After that, you can search by category, security, operations, whatever it happens to be, management. But you can put in a title. I mean, like, for example, if you're interested in 5G, just type in 5G and you'll see all the articles. I actually have six articles on 6G, if you can believe it. They're out there. But it's free, doesn't cost you anything. And here's the other thing, Mike. We do not use cookies. You know, you go to the IT Weekly newsletter. We're not going to put anything on your machine to track and take a look at what's doing. We don't do that. It's absolutely free. So take a look at the IT Weekly newsletter. And also, I'm going to put a plug in for our producer, Michelle Rado. She takes what you and I do and cleans it up. And she is a wonderful person and makes us look a lot better. But if anybody ever is interested in any sort of a podcast, Michelle can do it for them also.
And Michelle can be found at Flying Pig Audio, which is an interesting name. You should check that out on there as well. Thanks again to Michelle. By the way, if you're interested in this podcast and subscribing or following it, I guess as the cool kids say, find all the links for that at smallworldbigdata.com under the podcast, where the homepage for this Tech Top 6 podcast lives. And all the places for Apple Podcast and so on are there. You can link directly to them. If you're already subscribed or following us, thank you very much. If you enjoy what you're listening to, please give us a good rating and help other folks find it too. That would be a great help. If you want to give us any feedback or you have any suggestions, jokes, or comments on any of the articles we've covered, or you have a wish list of things you wish we would talk about, there's a form on smallworldbigdata.com on the Tech Top 6 podcast homepage there. just fill that out and it comes directly to us. You don't have to mess with email or anything else that comes to the cast and crew directly. So I encourage you to get in touch with us if you have any questions. Warren, another interesting week. Thanks for bringing those articles. I can't wait to see what's coming up next.
I'm going to try and find something out of the security area. Like you said, Mike, when we stop talking about security, you'll know that's been solved. But
probably the end of the world at that point. You're probably worried about something else, right?
Exactly, exactly. Mike, as always, a pleasure talking to you. Take care, my friend.
All right, thanks. Take care, guys.
This has been a Small World Big Data Podcast.